Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Right then, today we have got Andy Berry on the podcast. So thanks, mate, for joining us on the, I guess it's the last bit of your taper before the 24-hour Lakes Peaks Challenge. Is that what it's called to begin with?
Yeah, Lakes 24-hour Challenge, Lakes 24-hour record probably is what I'd call it.
Yeah, it's one of those ones that's not as well known outside of the fell running world, I guess you'd say.
Yeah, I think because, and this is like bordering on blowing my own trumpet, I guess, very few people go for it, really. It's like, it's not, you're either successful or you fail. There is no middle ground. There's no completion. There's no, yeah, there is no second place. You either do it or you don't. And so, and people who've gone for it and maybe not say anything as well. So there's quite a few people who I know about who maybe not made any noise at all and just gone for it and failed. And you know, it's some of the bigger names of fell running, you know, and it's a big effort, it's a big day out, and it's exciting.
When it's like you say, it's either fail, well, complete or fail. It's just one of the toughest ones out there, isn't it? If it's probably the toughest one that you can go for in terms of records, and to put it into perspective for us, it's what's the record at the moment? 78.
I always think now that to add another one on, the graph doesn't just go up gently, because you've got to do everything the last person did and then add on another top. In order to add on another top, you need to find probably 30 minutes. So you need to run, well, I need to run what Kim Collison did, 30 minutes faster, and still have the legs to add in the top. So now you're looking at about 100 miles in with, say, 11,000 metres of climbing, 12,000 metres of climbing, but not on trail. Some of it's got decent paths. Some of it hasn't, you know, and everything in between. There's about 4 kilometres of road on it, and that's it. It's just, I guess, it's similar to doing UTS, but on the fells.
And like the UTS, that is probably, in race terms, it's definitely the hardest 100 miler we've got in the UK, thinking about it. But the support in terms of checkpoints and logistics is out there. So,
with that said, on 24 hour, I'm going to have people running next to me carrying all my stuff. I don't have to carry a race pack. I don't have to do any of that. I've literally got a belt with a tracker in that's about yay big, and that's it. And I can have as much food and as much drink at my fingertips all day. So that is a big, you know, swing back in my favour, I'd say.
when it comes to the
rough comparisons, I think they're kind of
yeah people will compare when you can start comparing times and elevation to other races in other areas, it's so hard, if I'm honest. It's just a completely different terrain.
Look at Jim Walmsley's time at Western States compared to what he tries to do at UTMB. You know, they're both 100 miles, but yeah. You're not going to complete UTMB in whatever it was, 13 hours.
Yeah.
So just different things.
You can only compare it to the actual records that have gone, I think, and stuff like that. And then when people can see someone of the likes of Kim has done 78 peaks and in what was probably one of his best runs, then that puts it into perspective even more if you know more about the sport and more about Kim, I guess. And then I guess it's more the fact that, yeah, the logistics of getting a team together for you guys that are running so fast and hard, I guess that's part of the issue as well. When I've been involved in the odd round that has been fast, it's quite hard to get that support for that amount of time that can basically keep up with you and you can trust. Has that been difficult or was that easy?
I'm lucky I'm a member of Keswick, so there's quite a few Keswick runners coming out, and you know the depth of talent in that club is just huge. So I've got quite a few of those guys out, and then I'm lucky enough to have some friends who are super fast. So Damien Hall's coming out, Steve Bergentraw's coming out, Carol Morgan's coming out, you know, a lot of Gavin Dale, who's absolutely on fire.
Yeah.
This year, he's coming out. And then I'm coached by Kim, so he's going to come and trip me up in the last leg and laugh in my face by 10 seconds and be like, ha! You thought it was going to be that easy, did you, Barry? No. But no, he's coming out and doing the last two legs with me, actually. So, and then other friends and things as well.
Yeah, I guess people doing shorter sections and stuff can keep up with you over that
and distance. There's also, you know, there's chances to miss tops out, or, you know, so when I supported on Jack Quenzel's Bob Graham last year, you know, we scored quite a few tops with support runners in order to get a break going down the Helvellyn Ridge, you know, and it works fine.
Yeah, I did the same on Beth Pascal's Bob. I did leg three with her, and she was destroying me, to be honest. And it was like, I had to miss a couple of tops out there, just about.
It's that feeling, isn't it, when you're on a training week, and so it's like a fast run on a training week, and you're going, oh yeah, sure, I'll come and help, and then
I had to
for 3 weeks.
I had to basically peak just to do leg three with her, and then I just had a glute issue. I was like, oh my god. But luckily Shane Ollie was with us as well, so he took like all full responsibility. I was just jogging along feeding her, basically. It's good to be part of those things. Have you been doing any of the training with the team that you're going to be out with, or has it been mostly on your own? Like, from what I see, just from outside, you do a lot of the training on your own?
Yeah, so a lot of miles by myself, really. I quite like it, if I'm honest. It's why I do it. I'm massively, massively competitive, but mainly with myself. And I just love being out in the hills. And also logistically, just to fit everything else in life, whether that's time with my son or time with my partner and then seeing friends and all of that, means that I often get out of the van and get out the door, whatever, and as early as I can or as late as I can, whatever's required. And that's my way of balancing it, I guess.
Because,
you know, full-time work and everything on top of it, you just got to squeeze it in where you can, really.
And then it's almost like guilt-free running when you're squeezing it in rather than taking time off everyone else.
Yeah, I guess I've had a time in my life where there was a guilt element to it, but there isn't anymore. Kind of changed for me. Running is definitely a huge part of who I am, but it also makes me a better version of myself for all the other times. Makes me a better dad. It makes me a better partner, because when I come back from the mountains, I'm just much more alive. in around, really.
Yeah, I get that. It's similar in our house. Luckily, I don't know if it was the same for you. When I met my wife, I was already a runner kind of thing. It was already part of my life. It was already in my life. So it wasn't like, you know, like it wasn't like a change 10 years later and it took over. So it's evolved a lot. Like having the kids, all I do now is I try and change it as much as I can, train when they're in school or I'm up early kind of thing and out so I can get back at least for the evening, you know, if it's a long day in the hills or something.
Yeah, so my life's changed so that I've got my son for a week and then I don't have my son for a week. And so
yeah.
The weeks that I do, it's a lot of treadmill, speed sessions, you know, and also him out on his mountain bike. We go around like the local forests, we do miles with him on his bike, and we do like hikes and things in the Lake District and I'll just put loads of water in my pack and just weigh myself down. And then on the weeks when he's not, it's a lot more outside, long runs in the hills. And that's how I balance it, but it works really well. And it's probably one of the biggest changes for me, really, is that regular, every other weekend, out in the hills, but then the concentrated time to do my sessions as well, it works really well.
That's almost like you're working to like a 2-week schedule. Like I found more recently, since people have got more fluid jobs and lives, like that kind of, rather than trying to squeeze everything with a long run at the weekend, what you're doing is a great way of doing it. Especially it allows you to have some bigger days on the week where you can, and then you can just have those speed sessions but a bit shorter the following week. Is that what it's been like?
Yeah, and also split sessions. So we'll do say an hour and a half session on the treadmill on the Saturday morning, and then as long as I want, just as easy as I want, with James on his bike. And then, you know, I've got a nice easy run with damage in the legs, you know, hard work in the legs from the morning and things like that. And I think all of those things build on top of each other. It's about having that relationship with your coach, isn't it? About, okay, this is your life and what works best in order to get the changes that we want to see. And Kim's been brilliant at sorting that out, and we definitely work well together with that.
Has it helped? Obviously, Kim's got the record now. He also, did he have the record on the Paddy Buckley when you were due to attempt it?
Until
Finlay turned up.
Yeah, until Ali Bevan said that the Finpocalypse came. So that was 2 weeks before I was going to go. So yeah, so that was a fun cup of coffee when I first sat down with him. He was like, so what are your plans? And I'm like, oh, you know, I was thinking about doing the Paddy Buckley and then gearing up for the Lakes 24-hour record. He's kind of like, so you want me to coach you to break my records? And I was like, well, since you put it like that, it does sound a little worse than how I was thinking it in my head. But yeah, overall, that's the that's what I was thinking. he's been mint. He's been really, really great. And,
I can imagine
he's
it's
a really nice guy as well.
Yeah, I can imagine it spurns him on as well. Because he's got some talented athletes, not just you, obviously putting in some great performances. And although you're going for essentially his records, it's probably exciting for him. Probably adds a bit of pressure to his own work, if anything.
And my partner put it to us like this: she's like, well, imagine if he could get somebody like you to break the 24-hour record. How good's that going to be for his coaching? And I was like, cheers. Vote
of confidence
there from the back.
Yeah. There's easier marketing strategies, I think, than coaching someone for that. Will he be out on the course with you?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So he's doing, I think it's leg 6 and 7. So he's basically doing from Wasdale to the end.
Mm.
So I actually think he's out now, wrecking it at this exact moment.
Good. And, yeah, so with this 24-hour record, there's 78 peaks, like you say, well over 10,000 meters. It's been held by some really big names. I know the ladies' record, was that last year, Fiona? Or was it sooner than that?
I can't quite remember. Yeah, it must have been last year.
Yeah, that's changed hands a few times as well. How much, what do you think the limit of this record is what I was going to ask at the moment, because like I would argue that Finley's probably the best mountain runner we've got and further afield, maybe. And you're not far off his Paddy Buckley time, about 20 minutes in theory. So you're up there as well, and Kim's up there. How far, like you say, because you've got to put in a big effort to add in another top. Is it more the fact that people will go faster?
Yeah, like records are there to be broken, and whilst there will be a natural limit, I would say that. So I think Jack Quenzel's a great example. Everybody else looked at Killian's time and went, oh, well, that's not going to be broken for 20 years or 30 years until, you know, the next superstar comes along. And Jack Quenzel looked at it and went, I think Killian had a bad day there. I think that he did it on tired legs. He wasn't tapered in. He just turned up and did it. I can do that. And sometimes just that, I think that you agree that in our sport, too many people get put on pedestals. And then they'll do something and it just can't be beaten. And I think that what Jack Quenzel showed me last year was that if you just take the name off it and just throw everything you've got at it, and you might not get it. You know, there is literally no guarantee. I know that I could turn up on Friday night, have the day of my life into Saturday, and still miss this record. It's very, very, that's a very realistic outcome. And I know that. But, hey, I might not. I might have the day of my life and do it. That's exciting, right?
Definitely.
And so I would say that there's definitely 80 there. I think St. Sunday, Crag or Haystacks will go into what's there. So I think that 80, 81, once you start getting to that, I think you probably start looking at times, because you can't break it by just doing the same tops and faster. Which is obviously plan B for Saturday. I'd rather add a top.
It's funny, isn't it? Knowing the kind of people that would be going for that record, it's almost like going faster might not be quite enough kind of thing. It's like you say, it's plan B, but for most records, that is the goal, isn't it? But it's such an interesting one that you would much rather add a top, wouldn't you? Anyone would.
I don't know. Somehow I see it as adding the top's a bit more special, isn't it? It's like pushing that boundary. It feels like pushing the boundary more than just beating the time. But obviously, I mean, I'd take beating the time. I'll take a second faster, that'll do. But no, definitely, yeah, adding the top would be special, you know?
When it comes to the record or any of these records, there's so many races around at the moment, and like UTS had just gone at the weekend. So what drives you to go for a record like this rather than do another big race? Because you've got to treat it the same as you are doing a race. What draws you to these records and rounds?
Interesting. I think that for me, definitely the being out in the mountains is special, and I think that a lot of the improvement over the last few years is definitely in my head, essentially. Like on paper, I'm faster, but it's marginal relatively. But so I have to enjoy the training. I just have to. And so having that almost sense of adventure about it, and I have been working on how do I get that feeling for racing.
Mm.
Because really, I've never performed at races. Okay, I've done all right at the odd one. But ultimately, how do I get that drive to push into racing? So after this, I'm going to see how well I can do a 100 miler. That's how I'm going to frame it. It's not I want to win this race or that race or whatever. It's right. Mm. How well can you run 100 miles and go? So I started Lakeland. I'm going to do the ARC and then UDS next year. And we'll see.
Mm.
But it definitely for now, it's just that, I love Scotland. I love the Lake District mountains, but I'm going to start running out of these challenges. I need to figure something else out.
Yeah, that is one good thing. There is an endless amount. And then for people that don't go for the big ones, they just seem to make up their own challenges anyway. So.
And that's definitely something I didn't want to do. So I guess for me, this journey started after I did the steep part round, which was every mountain 2,500 feet and over. So I did that, managed to set a record for it. And it was after that that I chose, right, okay, when all this is done and my knees are shot and I'm, trottling around as a vet 70 trying to disrupt some youngsters' race days, what do I want to look back on? Do I want to look back on having, and there's nothing wrong with this is just personal, do I want to look back on having, made stuff up or, gone round picking off races that I think I'll win, or do I want to just see, would I be more proud of seeing how far I can go and failing than I would of aiming short and succeeding?
Yeah.
And it was a conscious choice to go, right, well, I understand that this goal I could fail at. It's going to take me 2 years to prepare for it, put it all out there and see what happens. And it's exciting. It's Saturday,
Yeah. When you've been, like you say, if it's almost like a 2 year plan, what, take me back to before the 2 year plan. So what was going on in the lead up to almost draw you to make the conclusion that, right, okay, I'm going to give this a crack and I'm going to give myself 2 years to build to it. So assuming the decision was made 2 years ago, what led you to that decision back then?
The realization that I had a house unit around me that would support me all the way, go be all you can be. My partner and my son are just like, go for it, take it as far as you can, and a lot more open about what that'll mean, what that entails. I've got DIY jobs that are 2 years old to go alongside the 2 years of effort. And, and it's very much a case of, I guess, always knowing that I could be better and letting go of the excuses, letting go of, okay, well, I'll just miss this training session. I'm a massive fan of Steve Magnus and Brad Stolberg.
Yeah.
The psychology books that they do in their sports psychology. And, people give themselves out all the time, whether it's a eat bad diet, whether it's missing training sessions, whether it's, find an excuse before your race day for why you're already going to fail. Well, that's a choice you're making, and it's a self-defense mechanism to protect yourself. And once you realize that, then you can kind of let go of it. I'm comfortable with failure. Come Monday morning, whether I've got the Lakes 24-hour record or not, doesn't alter who I am,
I guess it must feel, you must feel, like I can see how excited you are, kind of thing about it. So it must, I imagine you must feel good about the fact that in that 2 years you put, you know, now no matter what happens on Saturday, you've put yourself in a position where it's, where it's a possibility. Yes, something could happen that's out of your control, but right now it sounds like you're confident that you're in a place where you can go out there and have a good chance of doing it. Is that, yeah, is that one of the best things about the last 2 years, I imagine?
Yeah, like standing on, getting out of the car, standing on that start line with a realistic chance that it could happen. It's, you know, I'm a better runner now than I was 2 years ago. More comfortable in who I am as a runner than I was 2 years ago. And I'm ready just to go out, leave it all out there. And if it's not enough, it's not enough. If it is enough, great. You know, either way, we'll celebrate for a few days and then we'll recover and then it'll be back to work to go to the next one. It really doesn't matter, essentially.
Yeah.
And that's a great feeling because it is only running. Like,
yeah.
it's not the end of the world.
No, it's not.
Good, but it shouldn't make us feel awful about who we are. It should be an addition to your life. And whether that's completing a race for the first time or whether that's pushing for records, that shouldn't matter. Like, it doesn't alter who you are. It just makes
when you've gone, like you say, some of the race results from a few years ago, you said yourself might not, they weren't at your potential kind of thing. So what do you think were the main changes? Was it more, is it been training with Kim, or has it been yourself changing training back then? Or is it a book that you read and it was a shift in mindset? Or has it just been a gradual process and then you've realised each time that you can push the envelope a little bit? Or was it, what I'm trying to say is, was it a clear decision when you were doing racing more, I guess, that you're gonna go all in on this kind of running, or was it more gradual?
I think it was probably more gradual. I think it's just learning that little bit every time, and whether that's learning bits off your friends who you're out running with, or whether that's learning bits off somebody as experienced as Kim and knowledgeable as Kim, whether that's a little bit in a book. Like, I don't take the books verbatim. You know, you take out a little bit that applies to you, and some bits will chime more with me than they might with you. But I think that there's so much out there to learn for everybody. You know, I read, say, George Foster's post, did a whole series after his last race about different things. And, you know, like, some of it was like, oh, okay, I know that. And some of it was like, oh, that's interesting. I hadn't thought of it that way. And you can learn from anywhere, even from people doing stupid videos on Instagram.
Yeah, you better listening to George and me, I think. But I can't believe how much he's posted in the last few months. Like, George is another one, like you say, like he'll openly said, I chatted to him after his Bob Graham, and it wasn't like his sole focus, it wasn't a big focus, and he put out a time at the time that was, I guess people didn't think anyone would get that close at the time, and that shifted people's mindset, I think, a little bit with the Bob Graham. So you're right, all it, like, and Jack coming over and just, yeah, without, basically, with no regard to that record, he'd looked at it a different way. Like you say, he'd looked at the parts where, like, Killian had slowed down and things like this towards the end, and knew that he, on a good day, he possibly wouldn't and stuff like this. Have you been taking bits like that and taking a look at the record and even, like, you're having to look at Kim's times essentially and going, where can you make up times or where were you might be slower and things like that, and adding it up? Or is it just, I'm going to run to my best ability?
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
His start is just explosive. Like, his times over Northern Fells are just, you know, I look at them and I've tried to train to them and I've just done some of them and I'm just gone. I'm not a Ferrari. I'm a much more like a diesel car that once you get up to, like, you know, a decent speed, then it'll keep going.
Okay.
So in order to get around that, I'm going to start a leg earlier and get my time in the bank. So his last leg time, relatively speaking, I'm going to take a chunk of time off that. So his last leg will be my first leg.
Mm.
Then I'll try to survive his first leg. And then when I get to the end of my leg two at Threlkeld, what the difference is there will be actually what I've probably got more like what I've got to play with.
Got you.
And then after that, it's just a game of protect it for as long as I can, as much as I can. And I expect it'll kind of go lose a bit, gain a bit, lose a bit, gain a bit until probably Langdale. And then hopefully I'll be able to maintain it from there. So yeah, and just having smooth changeovers, take out all the things that I can control as best I can, control them.
Yeah.
I can't control how fast he ran. I can only control how fast I can run. So if you break it down, it's about 4.25 miles an hour. I can do 4.25 miles an hour in the mountains. I know I can. I can do that for 24 hours and I'll be there or thereabouts. So realistically, it's going to be more like 5 at the start and 3.5 at the end. But I can
do it's
that.
A great way of thinking about it, really. Yeah.
And don't worry about the split. I've got my times I need to be through certain road crossings to keep it possible.
Mm.
But I'm really not concerned. Top the top. You know?
Yeah. No, that's good. People will always ask. People will always ask about. they always ask me anyway about food and nutrition and stuff like that. So, let's start with day to day life. What does nutrition look like? Is that something? Do you think about a lot? Have you changed a lot again in the last couple of years?
Yeah, I turned plant based and vegan 3 years ago, and that's. I think that you can have I did it for environmental reasons. That's, you know, I can't afford to put solar panels on my house. I can't afford an electric car. The next one I can do is change my diet, and that will make a big impact. So that's what I chose to do. From a sporting perspective, you can be a healthy vegan or an unhealthy vegan. You can be a healthy meat eater or an unhealthy meat eater. It's more about thinking about making your food from scratch. Or, you know, am I making sure I hit all the major food groups? I have a physical job, so I'm a plumber on a building site. That's what I do. Self-employed so that I can naff off when I go do something stupid. So I normally, you know, on a high training week, I can be requiring anything between 3,500 to 4,000 calories a day. I'll do that. I use Huel. I think it's a great way of getting good calories in. So I'll sometimes have two of those a day, intermixed with, you know, breakfast, afternoon snack, like pre-workout snack, tea, supper, you know, five or six food. I love food. I get almost as excited about food as I do about running. I love cooking, love food. So,
Did you love cooking and cooking things from scratch before you went plant based? Yeah.
I've always enjoyed it, but it's something that we like to do in the house. You know, like make the kitchen the hub of the house.
Mm.
It's fun, you know.
That was going to be one of my questions, actually, because if someone's training a lot, that when it is plant based, like, and it's in a healthy way, the volume can be quite a lot, I imagine. Not just volume of food that you have to increase, but having the Huel is almost perfect kind of thing, using it in that way.
Yeah, for sure. Because, you know, it's like a protein shake with good calories and vitamins.
Yeah, and vitamins and stuff, yeah.
You know, basically, I think it's got like nearly 30 grams of protein and so 20 grams of protein.
Yeah. It doesn't taste like feet either.
That's the first question everybody always asks. How do you get enough protein? And you're like, pretty much the same way you do. I eat food.
I've been having some of those heels, specific, like a lot of the time, like a day before a race or something, my appetite's not usually that good, or day before a bigger training run or after a training run, something like that. Just because, like you say, it is just protein and vitamins and stuff like that. It's not like rocket science for runners or athletes. It's actually great.
I often think that some people overthink. Maybe you've got to think about it a lot, but if you know, there's no point in going to McDonald's and buying two cheeseburgers just to say, oh, you know, I needed the protein. No, that's no crap for you. Like, that's really bad for your body, like, on numerous other levels. I think you'd be better off maybe going home and having some peanut butter on toast with a banana or whatever you want, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, it's interesting, although, like, obviously you said it's for environmental reasons. You can, not selling the point, but just from a health point of view, it's... yeah, just a good thing. And I'm not vegan at all, but I'm married to a vegetarian, so it's very high plant-based with some meat thrown in. And I do see the value, like you say, in people moving towards that. I think a lot of the times it's, if you haven't been coming from a background where you're cooking from scratch or starting from scratch, it seems like you have to take the easy option, and the easy vegan options aren't always great.
I lost you there for a bit.
Oh, you got me?
I've got you back there now, yeah.
Don't worry. If the picture goes, don't worry about it. It records it perfect. Nah, yeah. No. If someone's starting from scratch, if someone is looking to turn, let's not say vegan, but add in more plants into their diet, that kind of thing.
I didn't go black and white. I phased it out over 6 months to a year. That's why I stayed 3 years rather than 4 years, because it was definitely, I didn't just go, oh, one day I'm going to be plant-based from now on, because I just felt that was unrealistic, you know. So it just started with main meals.
Yeah, okay.
Work back from there. Like, for a long time, all of my running foods, like, didn't change. I still had, you know, normal sweets and chocolate bars and all of that. And then just over time, I found a vegan version for that, so I'll just do that instead. Then it just kind of looks after itself then.
And you're like me, you're like supported by Talk, is that right? Talk Fitness?
Yeah. So,
what do you mainly use their stuff through training and races? Challenges?
Yeah. So, I've always loved their gels. Their gels are the tastiest ones. So, I approached them kind of like, hey, I use your gels. Is there any chance of a little bit of discount? And they were like, oh, yeah, sure. There you go.
Yeah.
So,
they are nice.
Yeah, they are. So, I use that, and then I use their flavourless powder as well. So my thing with the drinks is I normally use half fruit juice, like fresh fruit juice, half water with the Talk in. And then all I say to my partner is I want so many bottles on a leg. And and she'll just mix the juices up. So maybe one leg I'll have apple and mango and then a cherry or whatever. And that way I never kind of know what I'm going to get, and it's quite nice. Oh, this one's orange and pineapple. Mm.
the excitement.
Well, yeah, I mean, all the little things throughout the day, isn't it? It's just about tricking the mind to enjoy what you're trying to put in it, I guess.
Oh, definitely. Like I save things like the cola flavor, the one they do, like with caffeine in. That tastes really good to me, but obviously you can't just have caffeine from the start. So saving that until later on and tasting that, I always find is, it's like...
Yeah, I've tried to mix up the flavours, you know, so I've got like, whatever, a massive pack of gels for a leg and there's one of each flavour. It's just... strawberry yogurt. Mm.
Yeah, when is the... what is the kind of... Did you know how much? Are you really methodical with how many carbs per hour that you have in, or if you managed to push the limit to that as well?
The Ullswater rim that I did a couple of weeks back, that was my final test piece to see whether the stomach will take just over 100 an hour, and it was absolutely fine. So that's what the goal is, and that'll be throughout a variety of ways. At the start, it'll be talk gels mainly with stuff like I've been able to take gels all through the Paddy Buckley. I did just about on gels, you know, I can do 16 hours. So theory would run out and do 24 hours. I've never been disproven about that. But halfway through the day, I will put in some real food as well, just for variety. So the game will be two gels an hour, a little bit of something else, topped up with the powder in the bottles, and that should get me. So no, I'm not methodical, I guess. I'm not like I need to be this much, but that'll put me in the ballpark of having enough energy. As long as I get those in, I shouldn't have any problems.
Yeah, makes it easy, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Just keep keep throwing gels at me and just tell me to keep eating and I'll be fine.
Yeah. I always think people
on Sunday when I'm like,
yeah, you can, you know, like when, and then someone offers you a sweet treat like the day after or something, you're like, oh no.
Yeah, like I've got such a sweet tooth, and then after my Paddy Buckley, like I had all this like vegan pick and mix left, and I was like, on the Sunday I'm gonna have all this pick and mix. And I just looked at it, I was like, no way.
Yeah,
I'm savory all the way today.
I'm exactly the same. I can hammer the gels all day long and the liquids, and I have got a sweet tooth, and then you're right, the next day it's like, oh god, I need I'm not going anywhere near that. what time are you starting it and everything?
So midnight on Friday, going into Saturday, finish midnight Saturday, hopefully.
It's not a moot hole start, is it, traditionally?
No, so with the 24 hour you can start anywhere as long as you finish in the same place. So I'm gonna copy Fiona Pascal and start and finish at Newlands Hawes to try and get that Kim's last leg in first, as I said. So yeah, there's plenty of parking there as well, so easy enough.
Good. And will you have a tracker?
Yes. Yeah. So there's a tracker kicking about. It's in my bio on Instagram if it's not anywhere else. But I'm sure it'll be floating around the internet somewhere. Good.
I'll make sure I share it as well, so you'll have some more eyes on you, hopefully. Have you got people?
Hopefully not. Yeah. Wait, what's that in the morning? Nowhere to be seen.
I'll maybe wait till 12 hours in, see how you're going, and then go, Andy's doing really well. When you've, like you say, after this, I know you don't want to think too much after this, but
I'm fairly happy, to be honest.
Yeah. What? You say you've got the Lakeland 100, is that right?
Yeah, so that's 9 weeks after, 10 weeks after, something like that.
Are you going to be looking at Mark's time at that?
It could go anything. It could be that I just want to finish it first and foremost, and then it could be that my brain's had enough of the pain cave for this month, kind of thing. And it could be that it's like, no, we're shutting up shop. We're just going to have a nice cruise run. It could be that I have the fire in my belly and it's like, yeah, okay, perfect weather, let's go for it. And it could be anything in between those things. So my first and foremost goal is to get the Dale Main in good nick and then see where the day takes me. I think that I definitely want to, I think under 24 hours is, I think that's goal number one. And then after that, just see. It depends. Lakeland's its own beast, isn't it? You know, the weather, the competition. I mean, Gavin Dale's there. I think Mark Darvish is back as well. Like, it's a strong, it's a strong field, so absolutely nothing for granted. But sometimes that helps when it comes to chasing times and things. You know, if there's a group at the front that can not blow each other up at the start and then finish strongly together, then who knows?
Yeah, good man. It'll be interesting. Like you say, it's rare that you get kind of like a strength in depth at Lakeland with a good few runners right at the sharp end, or if there is, like you say, yeah, a couple will drop out at halfway or something like that. So it would be good to get two or three of you at least pacing each other around a bit.
Yeah, and I think that I messed up my race at Lakeland 50 last year by starting too fast, so I definitely don't want to make the same mistake again. And everyone always tells me that Lakeland 100 is just the most amazing thing in the world, so might as well go and find out and enjoy it for being that. And yeah, I think that I would say that time is beatable. All times are beatable. You know, and as you say, if there's, I'm pretty sure Mark is there again. And you know, if he's there, he knows it. He knows how fast he had to run. So I would see it as, oh well, I'll tuck in behind him, and then we can have a race at the end.
Yeah. It's exciting, mate. Have you got any plans to race like any of the bigger ones outside of the UK? Is that obviously?
Yeah,
is it on your mind with the travel and everything these days?
Yes, but I don't think it would stop me traveling to Europe in particular. I think that the US races, I think it may be a different thing. I mean, obviously, if I got the chance to go to something like Hard Rock, I'm not gonna turn that down. Like, you're just not gonna do that. But I'm not. It's difficult, you know. You don't want to cut your ropes or anything. I'm not a massive fan of the UTMB.
Yeah.
Brand, like, you know, some stories that I've heard about what they've done to people just for having their badge in a video or something like that is, you know, they're so far up themselves that. Anyway, that said, it's pretty much the race. It's the 100 miler, you know, like it's the unofficial 100 mile world championships, if you will. So the simplest way I can see of doing it would be to do UDS and do really well.
Yeah. The simplest way.
And go and do it just to go and, you know, have a race against the best in the world, pretty much, and see where we stack up. You know, they're only human. They've only got 24 hours a day. I mean, they might all have professional physios and, you know, be able to sleep as long as they want and not have to go and do a shift on a building site. But other than that, they're all just human. Go give them a race.
Yeah. So I won't ask you to give you any timelines or anything afterwards, because you've come into the end of 2 years worth of worth of the last one. So yeah, I'll give you a rest. But yeah, if it was, let's kind of wrap it up with some advice, because I like, from outside, I really like the way you've gone about the challenges that you've set yourself, and it seems like you're pushing yourself more than ever in the things that you want to do. If someone wants to take on these challenges like the Bob Graham or Paddy Buckley, and they're just like the normal kind of middle of the pack runner, but they think they might be able to capable of it, and they work full time just like you, like, one, you're proof that you can do it and do it very well, but what advice, if any, can you give people that are almost stopping themselves or getting in their own way from going for these challenges?
Discuss it with those around you, because although it's an individual thing, you know, it does take a village. So make sure you're all on the same page about what it takes. And then once you make your commitment, commit to it, you know, and go all in. And it, whether that's, you know, you live somewhere flat, like Durham isn't massively hilly, it's got some hills, so it takes big treadmill runs on 15%, and it takes all the different things that you read about online. You need to find what works for you. It's not about doing it once, it's about putting the bricks in the wall, like, is my thing, you know, like, you don't walk up to a house and it's just, okay, there wasn't a house, there is a house. It's one brick at a time. And so that's how we, especially at the start, me and Kim framed it. Like, I'd often just text him, or he'd text me on a Sunday and be like, oh, how was that week? Like, another solid brick in the wall. And he's like, yep, that was a, he'll either go, yep, that was a good solid brick, or he's like, that was an excellent brick. And that was just our way of framing, you know, that's another bit done, just another... Mm. It doesn't happen overnight. It's not about, you know, one thing. Like, we've tried and done multiple things. Even through the last 6 months, we've done, you know, we did a mini block of that, the Norwegian method, where we were doing two lower intensity sessions in a day. So we'd do like a one in the morning and one at night. We've done, you know, the cardinal sin. We did it for 4 weeks where you don't run your easy runs easy, you run them easy with a bit of effort, but for a very short amount of time. And just building all of these little blocks for a specific reason, which is why having a coach is probably one of the best things you can do if you're able to spare that money to get a coach. I'd definitely recommend it. I think that it's an excellent asset for me to be able to just open up my training peaks. What have I got to do? Okay, as long as I do that, I can look in the mirror on race day and go, I did everything I could. Look after your diet, look after your sleep. Sleep's massive. You know, I'm not the greatest at it. You know, there does have to be sacrifices in order to fit everything in. But understanding that it is important and not just discounting it. Alcohol, it wounds me. I love a beer. I absolutely love a beer, but I couldn't ignore the science any longer. If they created a pill, a supplement for all the benefits of not drinking alcohol, it would sell for hundreds and hundreds of pounds. Like, it's awful for you.
Sadly, it is.
You know, like, I read some research that was really solid about how even like two or three beers after a hard session completely negates all the improvement that you would have made off the hard session. It's like, shit, there goes the beers. You know, I used to love a beer after a hard training session. It's like, oh yeah, hard training session, beer. And so I made so that was Christmas reading.
Did Kim write that research though?
Yeah, it's like, I really wanted to ignore it, massively wanted to ignore it. But after Christmas, just gone, so in the last 5 months, you know, I haven't gone teetotal because I don't like to put that on myself either. But definitely choosing when to have a beer is
Yeah.
And I do think it's made a difference. I genuinely do. Not running my sessions too hard. So we did lactate testing.
Yeah.
To find out and to see where I was switching, which for me is around about 177 beats a minute heart rate. Over that, and I'm anabolic. So when I'm on the treadmill with a chest heart rate strap, I'll drop the speed or I'll drop the incline to make sure that I don't go over that, because over that, and I'm not building the right system for what I want. I'm not a short racer. So getting that intensity right for my sessions, because I think previously
it's really important, isn't it? Because a lot of people, they either misunderstand the 80-20, or they put too much emphasis on the fact that it should be, you're either running very, very hard or you're very, very easy. That's what a lot of people might see it as. And like you said, that's not the intensity that you want in for the majority of people's races, really. And that's not how the best are training either. It's more what you would call like a pyramid.
You'll see a first rep up here. And then a rep, and then a rep, and it's like, that's not good. Like,
yeah,
you know, there can be a little bit of drop off, but you really want to be trying to keep a level of intensity across the board. So
I guess that old way of just running your reps as hard as you can, it just sticks, doesn't it? A lot of the time, I guess that's where the treadmill can help to a certain extent, and obviously your heart rate reading. You can just set it and almost forget it and just get your session done.
Yeah, so, and we did it with, so when I was saying about that moderate intensity, trying to get, so for me it was running 5-minute Ks, get my heart rate from 155 to 160 down under 150. So we did it by just running all my runs at 5-minute Ks until I could control my heart rate enough to bring it down. And the treadmill for that was brilliant, because it takes out all the other sides of it. That kind of thing, I do think that for me, the treadmill work is a big part of keeping a level of science to the training. And also during winter, I do like the ability to just put a film on and just knock out my hour and a half run without getting cold and wet and miserable.
Yeah.
There's a time for getting cold and wet and miserable, but for me, that's out in the hills, getting properly cold and wet and miserable.
Yeah. I've got the, I didn't go as far as a treadmill, but I stuck a watt bike in the garage for that reason, because I'm not afraid of going out in the wet and the cold and everything, but like you say, when it's like, just if I want an intense session or something and it's icy, or it's like where I live, I can have 2 weeks of snow on the road, on the lanes. So yeah. I'd much rather just do a hard session on the watt bike in the garage these days. People seem to either love treadmills or they're completely against it, but it is a tool, and if you use it right, then it's definitely a brilliant one at that. I'm excited to see how you go, but hearing about your training and the insights has been really good too. So hopefully it goes well at the weekend, mate. I'm gonna let you go now, but yeah, if you want to follow Andy, is it Andy_Berry? And yeah, it's not just for this 24-hour record. I'm sure he's got lots more to come. Okay, cheers, Andy, mate. Thanks very much.
Yeah, cheers, man. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.